This is Talkback Gardening with Sophie Thompson and Troy Sincock.
Filling in for Deb Tribe on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And it is an absolute scorcher today. Mostly sunny in Adelaide, a top of 43 degrees, and throughout South Australia, very, very high temperatures. Murray Bridge 45, Renmark 44, 46 for Port Pirie and Whyalla, and where Sophie's heading, Port Augusta. 47 degrees, Sophie.
Ooh. Absolutely. I'm heading over to Kimber. On Australia Day, it's going to be 48. So, you know, that's because where I live isn't hot enough.
Now, later this morning, we'll be speaking to a horticultural supplier.
We will. We'll be speaking to Philip Smolt, who has been a horticultural supplier to the industry for decades, and I've known him for a very long time. And we're going to talk about what we can do to support our gardens. I mean, the reality is, you know, at this, you know, on the morning of a really hot day, there's only limited things that you can do. Mm. However, it's about the bigger picture. You know, if you find some areas in your garden are really struggling, we need to look ahead to next year's and subsequent years and say, you know, how can we better support them? And there are some little magic products that do make gardening easier on a day like today, and we're going to talk about that too.
Okay, I've got two gardening magazines to give away later as well, an ABC Gardening Australia magazine and an ABC Organic Gardener magazine. Just keep listening. I'll let you know how to win that a little bit later on. And you can be part of the show. It's your program, 1-300-222-891, the telephone number, or text through on 0467-922-891. And please remember that Sophie's advice is of a general nature and shouldn't be taken as personal professional advice.
This is Talkback Gardening with Sophie Thompson and Troy Sincock.
Filling in for Deb Tribe on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Where it's bang on 8:30, Sophie.
It is. Good morning, and good morning, Troy, and good morning, listeners.
And Philip Smolt, he is a horticultural supplier to the industry. You've been at that for many years. Philip, thank you so much for joining us on ABC Talkback Gardening.
Thanks, Troy. Hello, Sophie and team.
Yeah, and Philip was a regular with John Lamb and Deb. And I was thinking about, you know, this hot weekend coming up and the fact that I'm running around, and because I'm leaving my garden, I've got a slight level of anxiety. I'm going to play that down. You know, I'm running around yesterday making sure that everything's covered, and before I leave, I water my pot plants. And I thought, who do I want to have a discussion with about how you can prepare for the heat? And who's got the best knowledge and experience over many years? And it's definitely Philip. So thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So the reality is there's two ways of looking at this. You know, we've got this heat wave coming. I know my garden will probably have 4 or 5 days of 40 degree plus temperatures. And so, you know, there's only a certain amount I can do right now, but a lot of it is planning ahead. So one of the things that I'm often rabbiting on about that you can, you know, create is shade or shelter. So shade with shade cloth obviously makes a big difference, doesn't it, Philip?
Yeah, absolutely. And the key on there is try and use white shade cloth as against any other colour.
Okay. And because, is that because it's lighter?
No. What happens is that the sunlight reflects through the shade cloth and it still gives good light to the plant underneath, and so the growing conditions are good, and it also reflects a bit of the sun heat as well, whereas your blacks and greens and even your beiges can tend to absorb and create a hotter environment underneath.
Interesting. Now, that I didn't know. I've been using secondhand shade cloth that I've had for many years, and some of it is beige. So, interesting. So, and the shade cloth can drop the temperature, you know, underneath by 15 degrees almost straight off the bat, can't it?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, you've only got to walk down the street and walk under a tree and you go, oh, that was a big difference. Well, the plant's exactly the same. Under a bit of shade, they appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So there'll be many people who have temporary structures that they're putting up. You know, I've seen when these sort of heat waves come, people put all sorts of things from umbrellas and, you know, old curtains, anything. It becomes a bit of a Chinese laundry look sometimes, doesn't it?
Well, that's cool. You're out there to look after the plant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So shade is the ultimate thing. And, you know, my new property, the big focus is getting trees growing that will ultimately give me shade, or getting vines over structures growing to give us shade. The other thing that, you know, I'm particularly interested in is creating shelter. And by that, I mean protection from the wind. Now, it's pretty still today, but usually when we get these hot days, there's a day that has that awful hot wind. So anything you can do to cut that wind down basically means that the wind, you know, as the wind passes over the leaf of a plant, it rips moisture out. So it's drying your plants out.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's lots, you know, particularly new plants have got a lot more moisture in their leaves. Older plants and older leaves are more cellulose, and there's less water going out of the leaf. So particularly newer, fresher plants, you've got to do something now to protect them from that wind running over them. And, yeah, that'd be good.
So now, if plants are in pots, you've got the opportunity to move them and group them together somewhere where the conditions are more favourable. But when you and I were having a discussion yesterday, we also had a discussion about the fact that before we even talk about plants in pots, we should actually discuss potting media.
Yeah, look, some people buy cheaper potting mix, and one of the issues that are around that is that if you buy the cheaper ones, they often don't have a organic wetter in them. And so when you water, the water will often run very, very quickly through the pot and not spread evenly through the soil. So it's good to have good quality potting mix. Look for the one with the red label with the 5 white ticks on it, and make sure that you've got a good quality potting mix. Probably too late now to do anything, but, you know, when you're repotting, look at that. The other thing you were talking about is the pots, is that a lot of people have got raised garden beds and other sorts of things so that they can just move around. Sometimes those are pretty small, so you need to maybe put some shade or protection on the sides of those structures to keep the heat off the walls of the pots, because that's going to transfer the heat into the soil and cook the roots inside the pots.
Absolutely. So one of the things about pots, sorry, Philip, is when often plant pots we buy from the nursery, we don't get around to planting them. They're in this tiny little black pot. The soil temperature in those pots can get up to 60 degrees, and plant root tips die when the soil temperature gets in the sort of mid-40s. So, you know, it's really important to keep those plants, you know, even sit them in cover pots or something like that, so that they've got a bit of insulation.
Yeah, good suggestion. Yeah, anything to protect the outside of the pots from direct sunlight.
And one of the things, so I'm passionate about growing veggies, and I've got lots of wicking beds, but raised veggie beds, my big thing about metal veggie beds that are raised is how hot the sides get. So if you've got a veggie patch and the sides are metal and they're exposed, maybe you could even, you know, get a couple of bales of pea straw, which you're probably going to use at some point, and put them on the hot side up against the side of the bed, just to take that heat off it, and that will insulate the soil on the inside.
Oh, yeah. Good suggestion.
Now, Philip, we talked yesterday, and I want to have this discussion about watering. So this is obviously what, you know, I was running around yesterday making sure all areas of my garden have had a good deep soak. Watering effectively is really important, and watering deeply, because we're trying to get the water down, you know, 30 centimetres into the soil structure. Now, you like dripper systems, don't you?
Yeah, this is where you and I have a little difference of opinion, and that's good. Six gardeners, and they'll all have difference of opinion. So
absolutely,
it's great that we can bounce ideas off each other. But drippers are by far the best in plants that are going to be there longer term, trees and perennials, etc. Obviously, annuals, where you're just planting out, you'll want to use sprayers, your wobblers, whatever it is, because they're going to be planted in different places and you're going to keep moving around. But drippers are by far the best. One, you can imagine a funnel, turn it upside down. That's what a dripper's like. So it's wetted a tiny little spot on the top of the soil, but then it spreads out underneath. And that's where you want it. You want the roots to chase the water down underground. Because if you're sprinkling and watering on top, you're also watering the weeds. So, yeah. Why water the weeds? Keep the top surface dry, and also particularly under mulched areas.
Yeah.
Because you can go out and water over your mulch, and within seconds you see the water running away because it hasn't actually soaked into the soil. I prefer drippers, but
yep.
I accept sprayers and wobblers and all that are also good.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I used to, in my previous garden, we had salty bore water, so drippers were not an option because they would, a couple of runs and they were blocked with the salts. And I'm a bit of a fan of wobblers. And if people don't know what a wobbler is, it's a sprinkler that puts heavy droplets off, no mist, and it penetrates through thick foliage. And the thing with wobblers, though, they have to be put on longer, right? There's no 20-minute water or anything like that. So whatever way you're getting your water, you're putting your water on, you need to know that it's effective. And the best way to know it's effective is to dig down and see how far the soil is wet. I hate to say the last heat wave, I thought I was watering, this is a new garden, nothing set up properly yet. Eventually there will be drippers in areas, but we haven't got any of that done. But I thought I was watering effectively, and in the last heat wave I had some plants get bad scorch. And it's when I dug down, I found out that actually the water wasn't penetrating that far into the ground.
Yeah, and just keep in mind, because someone's then going to go, go and buy one of those moisture meters and stick them in the ground. Great for pots, but not out in your garden. You'll just break them as you try and push them into the soil. They won't go into the soil, but, just those little water ones for your pots, just to see how well you've watered your pots is great. But out in the garden, you're going to have to do your job. Dig a hole
Yeah, I've had a client who was relying on a moisture meter and it cost thousands because it was wrong. So, and that was in raised beds, in friable soil. So it went in okay. So, I really am a fan of putting your hands in the soil and seeing. Now, we've also mentioned mulch. It's essential to have mulch on. If you've got an area of garden that you haven't got around to mulching, or you've got some veggies that you've planted and you haven't mulched, can I tell you, get to the garden centre this morning, get the mulch, put it on. Mulch is like putting a pool cover on your pool. It's going to reduce, the need to water by 70% straight off the bat, and it's going to insulate and keep the roots of the plants happy.
Well, if someone's game enough to go out in the 30-plus temperature, which it already is, and do that, that's fine. But can I just recommend that they put a granular soil wetter underneath before they put the mulch down? Because what tends to happen is that after a little while, there's a microbial film that builds up on the soil underneath the mulch. And so every time you water through the mulch, the water hits that film and it runs away and doesn't soak directly in. So I would recommend putting a granular soil wetter on the soil before you put the mulch in, and that'll often last up to 6 months. Sometimes even longer. I've seen other different methods, but that's a lot easier than using the liquid ones.
Okay, fantastic. Now, a couple of other products. So Anthony rang in this morning and he said that product you talked about, I sprayed my hydrangeas, they cope with the heat better than they ever have before. We're talking about antitranspirants. So tell me about how they work, Philip.
Okay, they're a bit like putting a film over the top of the leaf to stop moisture going out of the leaf when the wind blows over. Be careful when you go into the shop to buy, because sometimes the staff are not quite up with this one and they'll try and sell you a soil wetter because they think that's what you want, but you want an antitranspirant, and on the label it'll have things like frost protection, sun protection, transplanting shock, all of those sorts of things will be on the label. So it's actually putting a coating on the leaf so that when it has strong winds or when you're planting out a new plant, the moisture can't go out of the leaf. It only lasts for a week or two, because as the leaf grows or moves incessantly after a week or so, the coating breaks off, and so you'd need to reapply it every 14 days. But it's an antitransplant and fantastic when you know you've left everything to the last minute. I've just planted some plants. I need to protect them. Get out there, give them as a spray. There are alternatives, but that's planning ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, if you had a shade house, you can install a mister. So, you know, that doesn't take away from watering. Misters just put moisture into the air to create a bit of humidity, which drops the temperature and keeps your plants happier. And they're quite affordable now. You know, it used to be quite complex, but you could just get one from the local hardware store. They're a good... do you like those, Philip?
I'm glad that you started the conversation with in a greenhouse or a shaded area.
Yep.
Don't go and mist your plants out in full sun or anything like that. You're just going to create huge problems for your leaves and everything. But in a shade house, I think they're great. They just, in big hot houses like the big ones out of Virginia and beyond, they will have them on days like today where they actually turn them on and they don't touch the plant.
Yeah.
They actually create almost a fogging situation, like a cloud, and it just cools the whole house down. They're not interested in watering the plant, because at the end of the day, we don't want to water the plant through the leaf. We want to water it through the roots. And so misting is just about that, as you say, a cooling mechanism. But in a shaded or non-direct sun situation.
Yeah, so perfect under your pergola, under your veranda. Yep. Anything like that. And the other thing that people sometimes think, misters use a lot of water, but running a mister for an hour or so is the same as having a 1 minute shorter shower. So it hardly uses any water and it makes it quite delightful. Now, we could talk for ages on this, but there's one other area that I want to talk about, and that's planning ahead. So what we've talked about with shade, shelter, grouping pots together, you know, watering effectively, anti-transplant and misters, that's all stuff that's we're doing, you know, you could theoretically do today, but planning ahead, seaweed-based plant tonics, which I often recommend and almost get mocked for, they do make the root system of the plant stronger, they help overcome plant transplant shock, and they can increase its resistance to heat tolerance, but they don't work immediately, do they, Philip?
No, it's a hormonal response within the plant, so it does take a week or two to actually work effectively through the whole plant. A good experiment is to have one lot of plants without seaweed extract and one with it. And on a hot day, you'll see that the leaves on the plants that have been treated with a seaweed-based product are going to be stiffer and firmer and not drooping as much, because the cellulose within the cell structure is stronger and there's not so much moisture. And so you don't have the moisture in the leaf heating up and the leaf going all droopy, and it can withstand. So it is a plan ahead process. So, you know, at least a fortnight, 7 to 14 days before, when you're going to plant out a little seedling, soak them in a bucket of seaweed extract before you go out, and then plant them and then use the water out of the bucket or whatever and just water it over the top. So, yeah, it is a plan ahead process. It's not going to fix it today.
Yeah. Now, there's one other thing I just wanted to touch on, and you sent me a photo of your fruit trees last night, and it reminded me that I'm using this same product, and it's fabulous for focusing the water around trees when you're getting them established, and that's a water well.
Mm, yeah, well, you see them in councils where they use them around freshly planted trees in the streets. Just a plastic surround, and just put it down, put your plant in it. And for the first, particularly trees, you know, 12, 18 months, you've got the advantages of being able to just fill it up and the water will just stay in there and won't run away. I mean, sometimes we do it, you know, manually with a moat around with the soil, but, you know, a side breaks out or whatever. But it works really, really well. Mm.
Absolutely. And I do remember at the time, because they were a South Australian invention, the inventor Brian Meesdale has since passed away, I think, hasn't he?
Yes, I think you're right. Mm.
I think he's passed away. But, you know, great invention. And there was a study of councils and where they used the water wells, the street trees, you know, had a 70% higher, you know, success rate. And now I've probably got those numbers wrong, but it was significant. And so you can buy them for yourself. And I've got some trees that I've planted out for future shade. It's going to be 5 years till they give me shade, and they're in the middle of sort of nowhere. And so because I'm not watering anything else there, I've put those tree wells around, and they are looking great. So
The key is don't leave them there forever. You know, that may be a 18 months, 2 years for a reasonable sized tree, because what you want to do is take them away and then slowly move your watering further and further away from the tree to encourage the roots outwards. It's that other trick too, you know, that you plant a tree and you put a stake in it. Don't leave the stake there forever, because the movement of the tree in the wind. So you don't want to stake a tree directly to the stake, because you want movement of the tree. And as the tree moves, it has a response by the roots going, oh, I've got some movement here, I better send out roots. But if you stake really, really tight, or keep your plant in this case, a water well situation, the plant says, well, I don't need to do anything, I'm just going to stay here. And the roots stay very isolated in that area, and they don't send out roots further away. So you want to encourage roots to go further and deeper. So don't leave the water wells for a long time, and don't leave stakes on plants for a long time.
Philip Smolt, you've been a wealth of knowledge this morning. Thanks so much for joining us on ABC Talkback Gardening.
Absolutely. Thank you, Philip. And I'm sure the listeners will have got heaps and heaps of little tips out of that. I was making notes too. So we're always learning. That's the great thing about gardening. So thank you, Philip.
Annette is the next caller from Moana. You've got a watering question, Annette.
Yes. Good morning, Sophie and presenter. Yes, forgot your name.
That's okay. You don't have
Troy.
To. Who cares?
Troy.
Who cares?
Troy, I know you're not the lady. At long last, I've put a dripping system in, and I have dwarf fruit trees in pots. Mm-hmm. Do I need to remove the sources so that they don't overwater or sit in water? Or do I leave the sources underneath them, please?
Okay. So theoretically, you need to remove the sources or put gravel in the saucer so the plant roots aren't sitting in the water.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if there's a bit of water in the saucer and the plants are out of it, you know, that creates a bit of humidity on a day like today. But ultimately, you know, removing the sources, if the watering system is working well. Now, you know, in a pot sometimes you don't want like a dripper necessarily. You probably want an octarometer or something that's actually getting water over the surface a bit more. But I would be taking the sources off. But when you know there's a heat wave, you can probably, you know, if a plant has a bit of water in the saucer on a day like today, it's going to suck it up so quickly, or it's going to evaporate. The problem comes when the weather cools down and you have plants sitting in water. That's when it's not good. But on a day like today, I know I'm heading away, and I've got, you know, in my nursery area where I've got lots of pot plants, I'm actually going to put things in saucers just so that they can get through the heat without me being here to tend for them.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll leave the sources in for the time being, but I will put gravel underneath. That would be really handy.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Good, thank you. And if I can ask a quick question, my broccoli has now finished. I've been picking it up until now. Can I cut it off and leave the roots in the soil? Would that be beneficial to the soil, or will I pull it all out, please?
It would be beneficial to the soil, go you, because the mycorrhizal, you know, the microbes in the soil won't be disturbed. If you go pulling that root system out, now bear in mind, you know, most people do pull it out because it's sort of, it feels like you're changing things over. But if you leave it there, the mycorrhizal associations in the soil, the microbial thing, don't get disturbed. So if you can just cut it off and, you know, work nearby, you know, you need to put goodness into the soil, you need to put compost, you need to put organic fertilizer. You know, bear in mind that that root system will have taken a lot of goodness out of the soil. So you can't go, you know, brassicas are sort of heavy feeders, so you can't go putting another heavy feeder immediately in the same spot. So, but yeah, if you can leave the root system in the soil, better for the soil.
1-300-222-891 to speak to Sophie Thompson on ABC Talkback Gardening. Ross from Allgates has done that. And Ross, you're thinking about doing a bit of manual pollinating.
Yes, Sophie and Troy. I've got a feijoa tree that I've had in the ground for about 3 years now, a bit older. And I've never noticed any bees around the flowers. And we have flowers this time of the year, although I would have thought they're supposed to be in autumn and winter to fruit. But, yeah, I never see any bees around it. And I was wondering whether or not you can sort of self-pollinate it.
Well, this is one of those quirky flowers because it's actually pollinated by birds. So it's one that you don't put in a netted orchard because it will never be able to be pollinated. Now, I would also say it will take a couple more years for it to fruit for you. So they're not exactly quick fruiting plants, not like, say, a peach or a nectarine that will give you fruit within 2 years. But one of the things that you may or may not know about feijoas, and they are an amazing plant. They make a, you know, fabulous hedge. They've got these really pretty flowers. If you go up to the flowers and you pick the petals off, so the petals are quite fleshy. It still leaves the stamens and the base of what will become a fruit when it finally gets around to fruiting. If you pick the petals off, they are edible, and the petals taste like fruit jelly. Wow. They're absolutely delicious. And so you can actually enjoy the flower until the plant is ready to set fruit. So, yeah, but they're not, you know, the bees aren't involved in this one.
So, well, how do the birds pollinate it then? Because all the flower section is a series of very stiff brittles with a central stamen.
Yep.
And I presume that somehow or other that central stamen is the fruiting part that has to be pollinated.
So the central bit is actually the male pollen, and the side bits are the female parts of the flower. So the bird gets in there looking for nectar, and just by, you know, moseying around in there, that happens. I don't know. We might ask if any member of the Rare Fruit Society knows if you can manually pollinate feijoa flowers, but I do know they're done by birds, and I also, you know, had a number in my garden, and you just wait till they're ready, and then they fruit naturally, and they're just a delight.
Ross from Allgate, thanks for your call. Let's head to West Lakes where Jen is there. They can be very romantic, long stem roses, but you're a bit too long, Jen.
They are indeed.
Tell us about that.
Pardon?
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, the bloom is on the end of a stem, which would be a metre long.
Yeah.
And I feel that so much energy is going into growing this great long stem to get a bloom.
Well,
and
it's probably
because of the pruning or what?
It's probably because of the variety. So I'm going to assume that the variety of rose you have is called a hybrid tea, and they are renowned for producing these amazing, magnificent blooms on really long stems, and that's just what they do. So unfortunately, you know, there's not much you can do about that if it's a type of rose. What you could do, Jen, is take a photo of the rose and the plant and send it along to the Rose Society via, you know, email, or go along to your local nursery or garden centre. I think they'll just say, look, that's a hybrid tea. It will naturally have these really long stems. They were the classic rose planted in front gardens where you had, you know, five different roses. They were all hybrid teas. They're magnificent flowers, but I sometimes say they have ugly legs. because as bushes, they're not as attractive as a floribunda, which is something like, you know, gold bunny or iceberg or bonica, which is more compact and is massed with lots of smaller flowers.
And Valentine's Day coming up in just a couple of weeks' time. You can probably make a few dollars out of those, I'd imagine, Jen. Thank you very much for your call. You can be part of the show. We've got just a half an hour to go. So please call through now if you'd like to speak to Sophie Thompson on ABC Talkback Gardening. I have two gardening magazines to give away a little bit later on, an ABC Gardening Australia magazine and ABC Organic Gardener magazine as well. This is your show, 1-300-222-891 is the telephone number. And please remember that Sophie's advice is of a general nature and shouldn't be taken as personal professional advice.
This is Talkback Gardening with Sophie Thompson and Troy Sincock.
Filling in for Deb Tribe on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And at 9.30 this morning, we'll take a look at Adelaide's World Festival, WOM Adelaide, which is the first weekend in March in Botanic Park, and we're going to showcase some of the acts you might know and then others you'll get to discover in about 6 weeks' time with the Associate Director, Anetra Pote, and the Saturday quiz. That's back again at 10 o'clock this morning as well. So an opportunity to win yourself a mega brain. We heard overnight that the corpse flower has bloomed and Joe Laverty was there to speak to some of the first people to take a whiff.
So we're outside the Botanic Gardens at the moment and I've run into a couple of people who seem to be quite eager to get in. What's your name?
Nancy.
Renee.
And you're off to see Smelanie?
Yes. I seen it on the news the other day and then I thought, oh, why not?
What are you doing tonight, James?
We're just going to see the smelly flower, the big smelly flower.
It is big, isn't it? Why do you want to see such a big stinky flower?
I don't know, it might smell interesting.
I'll say. Kevin, you are walking away from Smelanie. Does that mean you've seen it?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
You're a volunteer here and the grin on your face couldn't be larger. Tell me about the flower.
Wow, it's just magnificent. I spent 3 hours this afternoon next to it, waiting for it to open, and then it's just opened a couple of hours ago.
How fast did it open?
I wasn't there.
Oh, no, after 3 hours.
After 3 hours, I left, and of course, as soon as I left, it opened.
It was waiting. It said, is Kevin gone? Right, it's showtime.
Joe Laverty at Adelaide Botanic Gardens yesterday, and Kate from Glenelg, you went in to have a smell for yourself.
This morning we did. We had the privilege of having, I think they called it Sunrise with Smelanie. So we were very fortunate to get in before it was open to the public, which was well worth it on a day where it's quite hot. So it was a fantastic experience. We nearly went in last night because we've been watching online and saw that it was opening despite the media release saying it's not quite open yet. And I'm like, oh, I think it's about to open. But selfishly, I wanted to see the flowers underneath the, I think it's called the spandex, the phallic type structure in the middle. And I didn't think it was open enough last night for me to be able to see that. So I thought, no, just wait till tomorrow morning. That's enough. So I've seen it before when it was closed. So I think I'm rather sport in having seen it this morning and without having to go in last night as well.
Can you give us a sense of what it smells like, Kate?
Interestingly, you can. So it's up one side of the conservatory and you enter from the opposite side. On the northern side is where you enter. And you can smell it from there, but it's not super overpowering. It definitely, I mean, there's reports of it smelling like different things at different stages, like dead fish and rotten meat and dead rat. It definitely smelled like dead rat when we walked in, but it wasn't particularly overpowering up close. But the caveat to that is because the line stretches up over the bridge inside the conservatory, above is actually where the smell is the strongest. So when you're closer to it, it doesn't smell that bad. But if you're on the bridge in the line up, that's where the smell is the strongest, I think.
Well, it's just extraordinary to see the outpouring of excitement, Sophie, when it comes to this corpse flower, and maybe even more so this time because of this long wait.
Absolutely, and I love the fact that, you know, plants are highly intelligent creatures, and they do their thing when they're ready, and they know what they're doing. And just because we can't read the signs, I love the fact that she's a diva. I think that's fantastic. And can I say, if you were going to, you know, Adelaide Botanic Gardens in Australia are free to enter. If you were going to go to Kew Gardens, it'd cost you $50 to get in to see it, and you can go for free. So if you feel inclined to do a donation to support the amazing work of, you know, the whole Botanic Gardens team, all the staff, the director, everyone behind the scenes, and all the volunteers. So, you know, they're the ones probably standing there taking everyone's selfies. So good on you.
It's 11 past nine on ABC Talkback Gardening. And, of course, due to today's risk of fire, CFS have issued total fire bans for the entire state of South Australia except the Adelaide Metropolitan District, noting, though, that if you're in Onkaparinga, Playford, Salisbury or Tea Tree Gully, you are within a total fire ban area. During a total fire ban, you can't have any activity that could start a fire. Where total fire bans have been declared, it's very hazardous fire weather conditions predicted. The total fire ban applies for 24 hours until midnight, and just to repeat, a total fire ban today for the entire state of South Australia except the Adelaide metropolitan area. We're expecting 43 degrees in the city, up to 47 degrees at Port Augusta. 1300 222 891. Jenny is in Goodwood. Are you beating the heat today, Jenny?
Just. Look, I'm sorry, this is a fairly basic question, but I never know whether on a hot day to water in the morning or in the evening.
That's a really good question, Jenny. And can I say the best time to water before a hot day is actually the day before, right? You know, we want our plants to be hydrated, so their leaves are full of water before the heat comes. And, you know, if you go to a nursery or garden centre, you'll see staff on the end of a hose watering several times today, because plants in pots dry out so much more. You know, your garden might survive on, you know, couple of times a week watering. A veggie patch might in the ground might need to be watered daily, and your pots might need to be watered several times a day. So there's a great segment on Gardening Australia. So, you know, I talked about doing some research. If you can Google it, so, you know, the search engine I find is a bit clunky. So if you Google Gardening Australia plus Sophie Thompson plus smart watering. And if you put that all as one, it will bring up the segment. It's a segment I filmed a number of years ago with Greg Ingleton. And ironically, the day we filmed it was 41 degrees and we're filming outside and we were talking about the power of water to cool your home down and also, you know, to protect plants and everything like that. So, you know, ideally we're trying to make sure that the, you know, garden is hydrated before the hot weather, and, you know, you water when you can.
Thanks very much for your call, Jenny. We were talking about business ideas. We had the long-stemmed roses not that long ago. Got a message from Clint here, Sophie. I'm going to go down near Smelany and sell pegs for people's noses.
I love it.
Sally's in Warradale. How can we help you this morning, Sally?
I think she can help us.
Probably can.
Oh, good morning, Clint and Sophie. Yes, I have an answer about the feijoas.
Yep.
You might want to still do some hand pollination apps. I've never needed to. It's best to plant two different varieties of feijoa in the same area, and they help pollinate each other. The birds visit one and then the other, and hey presto, pollination.
So two varieties is better than one?
Absolutely.
Okay, fantastic. Well, there's all sorts of plants we do that with for cross-pollination. So that is great to know. And that's probably why, you know, people's hedges. I remember years ago I planted a hedge at someone's place and, you know, it fruited amazingly. So that would be why they're so successful.
Yeah, even a named cultivar and a seedling. It doesn't matter as long as you've got two and preferably that they're a different cultivar.
Yep.
And you don't have to have two separate ones. You could graft one onto the other, or you could plant two in one hole if you haven't got enough space to spread them out.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that. So Ross, I'm sure, is still listening, so thank you so much for your help with that, Sally. That's fabulous.
Michael is from Victor Harbour. Hello, Michael.
Morning, Troy. Morning, Sophie. I have a raised strawberry bed and they're just beginning to produce runners. This will be the second year that I've kept the strawberries in the same bed. Can I just replace it with organic matter and manure and take the old plants out and use the runners back in the same bed? Or what do I need to do to have a successful strawberry bed?
Organic matter is the key. So your compost, you know, absolutely. So what happens is when you put organic matter and compost in, it feeds all the microbes in the soil and they do the magic. So you can buy some microbial stimulants that also put, you know, good bugs into the soil. But if you've got a lot of your own good compost, just mix that through and water it in and that will be fine. People often end up with a strawberry bed that stays a strawberry bed for years and years and years. They, you know, probably feed it with organic matter and they do, you know, zhuzh it up with a bit of compost when they replant. But no, you can certainly do that, Michael.
Good on you, Michael. Thanks for being part of the show. You can join Sophie Thompson if you need some advice. And our next caller is from Harndorf. Mandy, you're looking to move a plant, are you?
I've got a swan plant in the garden. And I was wondering whether I can put it in a pot to move it to take to a different property.
To be honest, I'm going to say no. What you need to do is you need to harvest swans off that. So they're the seed pods. That's why we call it swan plant. And grow it again. They're not particularly long-lived. At that size, that's not going to transplant well. So I would definitely be harvesting the swans and start sowing them now. You know, if the swans – well, actually, no, the swans are probably not dried at the moment.
No.
Are they dried on your plants? They're still green.
No, they're still green and they're still getting bigger.
Yeah, okay. So keep them as long as you can. When do you have to move?
Probably April, May.
Oh, okay, so you'll have time. By then they will have, you know, finished off and you'll be able to harvest the plants. And with swan plant for people that don't know, it's called swan plant because it has these interesting puffy seed heads. It's a specific caterpillar food for the monarch butterfly and it's how you bring monarchs into your garden and they add delight. I've got some up here. The thing about them is always, you know, grow a number of plants because when the monarchs find you, sometimes the caterpillars can actually demolish your plants. When you've got only young plants, it's even worthwhile putting one in a net and keeping it free of caterpillars until it gets big enough and established. So good luck with that, Mandy.
1-300-222-891 or on the text 0467-922-891. Catherine from Walkerville texts through, a friend and I went to meet Melanie last night. Definitely smelt like the last time we had a dead rat in the ceiling, but it was absolutely spectacular.
Don't you love all these people? You know, they're trained noses. You know, we're talking about different smells. You know, they have they call it a nose, the person that's the expert in perfumery. And here we're talking about dead rats. And
amazing. Martin is from Gawler. How can Sophie help you?
I've just got a question in relation to removing water wells. I've got a couple in my in the verge, 10 metres by 3 metres, around some beautiful flowering plum trees put there 20 years ago, and now the bark of the trunk is touching them, so obviously I've got to get rid of them. But I did put a lawn around it. But how close should I, if I replace the lawn, should I go to the base of a flowering plum tree?
Oh, so the thing is, ideally you're trying to keep the – are these the upright plum trees or are these the spreading ones?
They're a spreading one. They're probably 7 or 8 metres across. It's only a 10-metre area, so the shade of them has cooled the lawn, so I've got to do a different sort of lawn or none, depending on your advice.
So I ideally, you know, when we have drought and plants are competing – you know, so the lawn's competing with the tree, you need to keep the lawn back from young trees by at least a metre in all directions. But an established tree will probably cope with the lawn. And actually, as you've said, the established tree will probably kill the lawn because the lawn doesn't get enough sun. So I think if you can, I would be looking, you know, talk to council, find out the policies, and I'd be putting shade plants under there instead. If you're going to put a lawn that will take that much shade, it will probably be a buffalo lawn. And if you've got another lawn next to it, it's going to get really messy. So, you know, just get rid of the lawn under the canopy and put shade ground covers or shade plants and find out the rules about, you know, how high things can be in a verge and all of that. But you could put in some dianellas, which are native plants. They have little beautiful little blue flowers that bring in blue banded bees. There's all sorts of things you could put in.
Thanks for your call, Martin. Rhonda is in Hallett Cove. You're dealing with all sorts of issues with your peace lily, Rhonda.
I certainly am. Thank you. Yes, I've had a two peace lilies, which my daughter gave me, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and they've been absolutely magnificent inside. And probably about a month ago, they started to look like they were drooping, or they were drooping as though they were dry, but I keep watering them. And now they're almost laying right down now. And I'm just wondering what I've done wrong, because I certainly don't want to lose them. I even separated one of them to see whether it was because it was too crowded in the pot.
Yeah.
But that hasn't helped neither.
Okay. So peace lilies do wilt when they get dry, but they also wilt if they get too much water and they're standing in water. So do they ever stand in water, Rhonda?
Only when I give it a deep water, like I used to give it once a week. I would put some water in a bowl and let it come up from the bottom.
Yeah.
But that has been fine all these years, and now all of a sudden, around about Christmas time, they started drooping, and I couldn't work out why, and I haven't watered them in the bowl since then.
Okay, so I would still do that, because you need to make sure, because sometimes the pots can become sort of hydrophobic, and so, you know, that plunging. I would even, if you've got a bucket, plunge them in and pull them out, so you make sure that the water gets all the way through and no more air bubbles come out. Because we don't know what's going on, you know, I would be looking for mealybug, which is an insect pest. It's a little white thing, but you'll see that. And if the leaves have gone daggy, what you could even do is cut them back, and which is going to look awful, but encourage new foliage to come. And have you been feeding them, Rhonda?
I have been, yes. A couple of days ago, I actually gave them some sea salt.
Yep, beautiful.
That would help it. But it
Absolutely. I don't know what to say. You know, they don't like wet feet. If they were standing in water for too long, that wouldn't be good. Yeah. But it doesn't sound like that's the issue. I think the seaweed-based plant tonic that you've given them, you know, is perfect. And if the leaves look really bad and they don't look like they're going to be able to come good, I'd cut them off. And, you know, have it in the right spot. You haven't moved them. It's not the conditions that have changed.
No. It sat in my entrance where I've got a glass window, frosted glass window, but it's not against the window, so it gets plenty of light. As I said, for years they've been absolutely magnificent. But all of a sudden they decided to start drooping.
Okay.
And I can't see, and I've got a water thing to see whether that's,
I don't trust those water meters. I mentioned before that one of my clients was relying on that, and it actually cost them thousands of dollars because it was saying it wasn't dry when it was. So you know, use your fingers, put them in the soil, and feel whether it's moist or not.
Rhonda from Halicobe, I hope that helps you out. Thanks for your call. 1-300-222-891 is the telephone number. The text line 0467-922-891. And you're going to need that because I have two gardening magazines to give away right now, an ABC Gardening Australia magazine and an ABC Organic Gardener magazine. And you can win them just by giving us a call, sending us a text. We'll take one call, one text, and you could be coming away with some reading, which would just be ideal for a hot day like today, Sophie.
Absolutely. So dial in.
Absolutely. Susie is from Mount Pleasant. I've got Sophie on the brain. From Mount Pleasant. Susie, how can we help you?
Oh, good morning. Look, with this hot weather, I'm a little bit limited with how much I can shade in my veggie garden. Mm-hmm. And I was just down there earlier this morning and doing the pumpkins and the beans and anything young. But I'm just wondering, with well-watered carrots and watermelon and rock melon and also eggplant and capsicum, which like the heat, do you need to shade them as well?
Not particularly. Now, it all comes down to foliage cover, right? So, for example, if your eggplant has plenty of foliage, the fruit will be shaded underneath. If the fruit is exposed, you know, it can get a little bit of sunburn where it's exposed. But things like
none of it's got fruit yet because it was such a late
start.
Yep.
So I haven't got any fruit, and there's plenty of foliage. But
yeah, so I wouldn't be worried at all. Capsicums, if anything, they can have a little bit of shade. You know, I never used to bother shading pumpkins. But things like beans, cucumbers, tomatoes, lettuces, leafy greens, I'm trying to think what else I've got. You know, those sort of crops are definitely better under shade cloth over 35 degrees. So I wouldn't worry about your other stuff. The most important thing you said is you have watered well. So, you know, if they're hydrated, they'll cope.
Good work, Susie. Thanks for your call. Now tell us about the Harvest Festival, Sophie.
Oh, the Harvest Festival is going to be amazing. It's a biennial event put on by Open Gardens SA, and it's coming up on the 14th and 15th of February. 14 productive gardens across Adelaide and the Hills are going to be open. So if you want inspiration on how to set up a veggie patch, you know, how to grow veggies, should you grow veggies, is it worth growing veggies, all that sort of stuff, do check out the details. Head to opengardenssa.org.au. You book tickets. There's all these different ways. You can either visit one garden or you can do them all or you can do a bundle. So it's going to be a fantastic event, and certainly worthwhile going to for inspiration and information.
And something to plan for in a couple of weeks' time. Sophie, thanks so much for being on the show. Very hot day. I think we've got some great advice about staying cool ourselves, keeping the garden cool. Of course, make sure you look out for any elderly neighbours or family members. And a lot of texts today too, just suggesting that people put out a bowl of water for birds and things like that, Sophie.
Absolutely, for birds, for lizards, for all sorts of creatures. So, you know, obviously we look after our pets on days like this, and I tell you what, having water for birds can be a game changer.
My word, certainly can. Well, Deb will be back with you again next Saturday morning. Thanks so much for being on the show, and keep yourself cool when you head to Kimber, 47 degrees in Port Augusta today.
Goodness. Absolutely, absolutely. So happy gardening to all our listeners, and stay cool.